Talent is the biggest asset for anyone coming to Ghana to operate a business. It seems like we have enough capital in Africa to actually finance.
Of course.
But I think the delta here is the gap in knowledge. Data in Africa is extremely expensive and it shuts out people out of the economy of business. So if you need to, you know, access data about starting a business and resources on how to start a business, I mean, each time you're online looking for those resources, it's costing you. Affordability of data is very, very important to the growth of an economy. In Ghana, if you have certain efficiencies that I've seen here, right? If you have log files and you're doing manual tasks inside your company, how are you going to compete with the Google and the Microsoft of the world? You just can't. I'm African, not because I live in Africa. I'm African because African was born in me.
Hey, you're welcome once again to Connected Minds podcast. And it's me again, Derek. Today, I'm in a conversation with Kissy, who owns Kissy & Co. Technology and Consulting Group. Now, this company is based in San Francisco and in Accra. He is also a leader in his field, and he runs another company called Zoe AI and Engineering Africa. Now, that's what Connected Minds is about. We're here to have conversations that empower you wherever you are. Stay connected and be with us. You're welcome. How you doing, man?
Wonderful, wonderful. It's a pleasure to be here and share my insights and experience with the audience.
Yeah, amazing. You do a lot of speaking.
Yeah.
So when I went onto your site, I saw quite a few events that you've spoken at. Been to Tanzania, a lot of events in Ghana, some in the US. That's fantastic. Yeah. That's fantastic. You said you want to foster tech innovation, advance impactful initiatives, and contribute to the ever-evolving business landscape.
Yeah.
How do you hope to do that?
First of all, let me address, I don't actually speak a lot. It's just more recently that I realized that in order to have the impact that I desire to have, influence has to be part of that. Before, I just wanted to focus on just the projects that are impactful.
Yeah.
But in order to be able to get the opportunity to carry out those projects, you need to engage people who can actually add value to the projects. And in order to be able to engage those individuals, you need to have some degree of influence for them to, you know, see that you're worth their while or whatever, right? So I started, you know, coming out of the shell and going out there, right? I got so many like speaking engagement requests and whatnot when I was at Microsoft. I was an engineer manager there at the time. And I rejected all of them because I didn't feel like it's really worth my time. I wanted to focus on actually engineering and actually solving problems. So I'm a very traditional engineer. I just want to, you know, go hide somewhere, get all the work done and just do an announcement, big splash, disappear, come back, do another announcement, big splash, disappear. But I think it's way more than that if you want to have like actual like sustainable impact.
Yep.
You need to be strategic, a whole lot more strategic than I thought, you know, I needed to be. And, you know, like I said, like you were asking, the way I want to do that is think about the core bottom line things that can actually move everybody forward. When it comes to the business landscape here, there is a whole lot of efficiency that people operate in, and they're used to it. And they think that's the way things should be or things are, and they can't get any better. I want to expose them to the world of enterprise software and how it enables businesses to function more efficiently and quite fast, right? You can't be a global company in Ghana if you have certain efficiencies that I've seen here, right? If you have log files and you're doing manual tasks inside your company, how are you going to compete with the Google and the Microsoft of the world? You just can't. Right? They are highly optimized to get as much work done. It's all about production, getting more and more and more stuff out there and refining the strategy and getting things, you know, done better. So Kissy & Co's, you know, fundamental, you know, mission and motive is to actually, you know, engage local businesses and engage local governments to actually adapt different technologies and different processes that can actually make them much more efficient and actually execute much more faster and be a lot more strategic, you know, through technology to some degree. And so aligning myself to that and my businesses to that is the direction I'm going in. And the nonprofit side with the Engineer Africa is more targeted towards things that businesses don't necessarily want to engage in. So, I mean, businesses can engage in like upskilling, you know, the population. But I think a nonprofit has a more unique approach to do that for the benefit of society and not just for the benefit of their bottom line, right? Because if you're influenced by the bottom line, you could probably just try to just ingest user ingest students into whatever operation you have and, you know, be more superficial in the things that can attract them, right? Whereas with a nonprofit approach, you know, you want to actually engage them and actually teach them core skills that can actually pretty much help them be, you know, good contributing citizens, right? In the engineering area. So part of our aim is capacity development, right? That's the workshops and, you know, training and stuff. And then the other aspect is projects that we think can actually enable people. So I spoke to you earlier about the public Wi-Fi. Right? Data in Africa is extremely expensive, right? And it shuts out people out of the economy of business, right? If you want to start a business and you don't have, if you're not connected or you, your connectivity is extremely expensive, you don't have enough access to data in the world, in the web, right? So if you need to, you know, access data about starting a business and resources on how to start a business, I mean, each time you're online looking for those resources, it's costing you.
Right? And I'm in LA.
Exactly, right? So by design, you are far behind than someone who's operating in the U.S. who's also starting a similar business as you are, right? You have this unique idea of solving a global issue. If someone else is in the U.S. starting that same issue, starting a business to start solve that same problem, you are at a disadvantage, right? You are at a huge disadvantage. This individual can just go to any local coffee shop and have access to data for free, right? They can go. There are so many different places they can go for free and access data for free. You don't have that option here in Ghana.
Right? And even if you do, it's very limited. Very limited.
It's very, very limited. And eventually they'll tell you to leave if you're not buying any of their services.
A cup of coffee.
Yeah. You know, if you're not, you know, so, and you also like certain things that you want to do, like if you're in technology and you're building like, you know, something like a game or whatever, right? You need to have an online game or whatever. You need to have enough connectivity to the interweb to actually test the game that you're developing. And if you're, connectivity is quite, you know, limited. I mean, you don't stand a chance compared to someone else outside, right?
Absolutely.
So the key thing here is those students that don't have enough, you know, money to buy data all the time, right? If they're just in Accra, they can just have access to data. All they have to do is just, you know, watch some ad for some time and then boom, they are connected, right? I've had experiences where people will tell me, I'm out of data.
Right?
They have to keep buying data all the time. Whereas data outside is in a continuum. You're constantly connected. Right. And that's the way it should be. And I want it to be, I want us to get to the point where it's normalized for people to be constantly connected.
Be connected. Right. You have you had the situation where you were back in the US and you're trying to contact someone in Ghana and you can't reach them. And then they contact you and you're like, my data had been switched off.
Because they're trying to conserve data.
because of how expensive it is.
How expensive it is, right? And so, you know, these are challenges that, you know, we need to solve in collaboration with the local government and local municipalities here, and local, you know, telecoms that are here, because affordability of data is very, very important to the growth of an economy. If we want to be honest about ourselves, right?
Especially now, Kevin.
Yeah.
Especially now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, a lot of businesses need to be started to solve unique problems that we have in our economy, in our current, environment. There's so many inefficiencies in how we do things, you know, and people have ideas on how to solve those problems. And, you know, I think we need to play a role in enabling them.
Yeah.
And so one key thing is data connectivity. And another thing that we thought about also doing is housing, right? Housing needs to be cheaper. You need to have a place where you could, you know, have sanctuary, right? If you happen to be born in a family where, you know, your parents were living in a kiosk, right? That can actually make you extremely disadvantaged towards being as successful as someone who was, you know, born living in like a more stable home or whatever, right? So the more accessible and the more cheaper homes are, the more we include more people into the economy. And so we need to move in that direction, and the government needs to be engaged in that. And so our goal is to prove with engineering that we can actually use extremely low-cost materials to produce housing units that are under $10,000.
Right? That's fantastic.
And that's the benchmark we're trying to hit using clay. I don't know if you're familiar with Atakwami.
Oh, I am. But hold that thought there.
Yeah.
Recently, I got a message from one of my older friends that the UK are developing clay homes that are going to be revolutionary for the housing industry in the UK. And then the man was basically trying to say, well, this is something that we've known in Africa for years.
Yeah.
You know, I was born in one of those homes.
Yeah.
And we haven't capitalized on that.
Yeah.
And we've taken that their system of building. And then now they're going back. So it's interesting you say that.
Yeah. I think we have to go back to core. I mean, there's a reason why when you go far outskirts of Ghana, you see these homes that are built with clay, and they've been there for probably like 50 years or 100 years, and they're still, you know, in great integrity, right?
Yeah.
That says a lot about the strength and says a lot about,
And it's so cool in there.
Yeah.
You know, it's so cool. You don't, you know, these days the homes are very hot.
Yeah.
But those clay houses, those mud houses are very cool.
Yeah.
In there.
And there's a reason why they chose to use clay.
Yes. Yes. One, ancient knowledge, man.
100%. And it's highly available materials.
Yeah.
And it requires low skill labor to actually, you know, execute a project of building, you know, with clay, right? Yeah.
Let's talk about the African Prosperity Dialogues 2024. You were there.
I was there, yes.
The president was there.
Yes.
And that was done at Pediasa Lodge.
That's correct, yes.
Presidential Lodge.
Yeah.
Yeah. How was it? How was it?
You know, it was it's a breath of fresh air to see all these leaders come together and pretty much unite on one message that we have to take our own prosperity into our own hands. That was the unifying message from, you know, all the leaders. And I think one person that really stood out to me and was quite vocal about some of the inefficiencies in how we operate was the president of Guyana.
Okay.
It was quite shocking to see, you know, someone that hasn't even lived, whose country is not even on the continent, be so passionate about how we can actually revolutionize Africa and make things a whole lot better and build a connection with the Caribbean populace as well. And actually, it was also like a message that says that Africa is not only for, you know, those who are on the continent of Africa, also the diaspora that is not currently in the continent, but they have Africa in them. And just kind of echoing what Kwame Nkrumah said.
Yeah.
You know? I'm African, not because I live in Africa. I'm African because African was born in me.
Yeah.
So those who are in Guyana, if Africa is born in them, they are Africans. Absolutely. By design. And they should contribute in the development of Africa.
Of the continent, yeah.
And we need to actually facilitate and enable that to occur. So I was quite impressed by, message from him and others as well. There were leaders, from different banks, African Development Bank, the African Bank, and them trying and actually, talking about how they finance like big infrastructure projects, gave me a great deal of insight because I didn't know a whole lot of how all of that comes together.
Yeah.
And there are some key inefficiencies that were exposed while they were talking, right? Even the local banks can actually do a whole lot in financing these local infrastructures, but they don't know how to do that and navigate the risk behind doing that, right? And I think these larger banks that are dedicated their resources towards these developments, they have figured out how to do that in an efficient way. Like, for example, if you're building a road, thinking about how you're going to finance it and, recoup the money back, they use TOEs to kind of help do that. Things like that, right?
Yeah.
So these vehicles for financing, it seems like they are all there. It seems like we have enough capital in Africa to actually finance.
Yeah, of course.
But I think the delta here is the gap in knowledge. Right. And so these leaders coming together and hopefully the smaller banks are there listening in and actually making connections with these larger banks and figuring out how they can, work together to finance things. And make sure the impact is felt. It's felt, right? Felt.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My question to you is that now you've come in and like I said, I'm seeing your billboards everywhere. You're staying.
Mm-hmm.
And what is making you say, now I'm going to do business now?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are you doing differently from the last time you came in?
Yeah.
What's the shift in mindset?
Yeah. So the shift in mindset is very, very simple, right? I'm not going to force like local governments to adopt more efficient processes. I'm going to focus on building enough influence that they seek out help from my organization to solve a key problem, right? Before, it was more on the offensive, going after this, going after that, right? Now, it's more about, proving myself and my companies to be, a huge asset to them. And one key thing that I'm really going to activate and take advantage of is, if I can play ball in Ghana, no problem. I'll play ball in Ethiopia. I'll play ball in Tanzania. And eventually, local government in Ghana is going to realize, hey, this guy is operating in Ghana. This other country is benefiting huge from this, efficiency and this thing they've built for them. And we're suffering here. Why are we doing this? We're not being very smart here, right? Eventually, it's pretty much, it's like a joke to them. I'm making mockery of them eventually, right? Mm. But not directly. And so that's one strategy I'm willing to, employ. And I think, unfortunately, I think there's a saying. I don't remember the saying. But and another thing, too, that I'm more focused on is the talent, right? We have a huge amount of talent available, and they're not put to good use, right? And within my organization, my goal is to utilize that talent as efficiently as I can and also to also help upskill that talent. If most of our business is from outside, I'm okay with that, right? That's the key shift in mindset. I'm completely okay with most of our business being from outside of Africa. But I want to make sure that I'm using as much local talent as possible to execute projects. So then we can actually still have a business, right? Before, if we were focused on just having,
government contracts
and local projects, projects from local companies and whatnot, I think we'll go bankrupt. it won't work. It's a little bit different. And I think we're also in our infancy, right? We're still building relationships. We're still getting to know the different key people in play that can actually open the doors for us. Until we get to that point, this is how we're operating our business. So, you know, that's, I think, a main shift there. I would say talent is the biggest asset for anyone coming to Ghana to operate a business. You know, there is huge unemployment rates, which means that you're going to get cheap talent, right? When there is unlimited supply or a huge amount of supply, then that means you actually get to dictate, you know, how much you pay employees. Pay your employees fairly and well, but you do know that you are not going to be paying, you know, San Francisco level of salaries for your developers here, right? And that is encouraging. And you can still have pretty close skill sets, you know, here. If you don't have that, you need to embark on a journey to actually train folks and bring them to that level, right? If you're from the outside trying to operate here, you probably have that exposure. You can bring that exposure to these local talents to bring them to that level of expertise that you already have. And that's what I'm trying to do. I spent a lot of time at, you know, these corporations, Fortune 500 corporations in the U.S., like Boston Scientific, U.S. Bank, Wanzig, and then Microsoft, right? What I've been exposed to and how things are operated and some of the efficiencies of how things get done, I want to instill it on my employees here. I want them to understand, hey, we're not just trying to just scratch the surface here. We're trying to go world-class level, right? And the people that I try to attract to my organization and my company is people who have a thirst for knowledge, right? And then instill in them the reality about if what it takes to be the best.
Yeah.
So the
average, you know, the average Ghanaian go to school, get a job, get a house, start a family, you know, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're struggling from that. The jobs are not there.
Mm-hmm.
They've all been to the school.
Mm-hmm.
The jobs are not there.
Yep.
We've heard a lot of things about the great things that tech can do,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of the great people dropping out,
mm-hmm.
with all these tech, you know, apps that we use,
mm-hmm.
the millionaires and billionaires. Yeah. Most of them dropped out, started mm-hmm. from their garages.
Mm-hmm.
What would be your how to get into tech for a young Ghanaian who probably doesn't even like university,
mm-hmm.
but needs to create something, start a life out of it? It's got mm-hmm. the desire and the interest.
Yeah. One thing, first off the bat, I want to say that there's nothing against universities about what I'm going to say. I think universities play a very, very key role in people's development. It's a social space, it's an artificial environment that is dedicated to learning, is dedicated to building connections, and learning how to learn. I think for me, I learned how to learn in the university. All the challenges that our teachers gave us of doing homework assignments and whatnot encourage us to learn how to learn. And so you need that skill of learning how to learn. If you haven't already learned how to learn in high school, then you're not ready to go on your own to build a business or to start, you know, venturing into tech to create something. Because the whole process of building anything is learning, right? And learning how to learn efficiently. And I think in college, I learned how my brain works. It's a very, very intimate process of spending a lot of time learning and trying to refine and optimize your learning process. Because you're being challenged to capture a whole lot of information And then being able to perform and demonstrate your absorption of that amount of information, right? And so you need to like figure out how to absorb that information as fast as you can and personalize to you, right? I remember back in the day, I was majoring in mechanical engineering. I was taking, I think it's statistics, statics. No, I think I was taking statics at the time, or maybe dynamics. This is like in mechanical engineering, like you measure the forces in a member and all of that stuff. It's pretty basic stuff for like engineering, mechanical engineering or civil engineering. You actually have to calculate, you know, all components of a machine or all components of a building to see how forces are distributed, tensions are distributed and all of that. And they'll give you two big problems on the test. This is not like, you can do, memory stuff on this, right?
Okay.
You need to know, and you're given about 45 minutes to complete those two problems, right? Right. And it takes a lot of calculations to solve each problem. You don't have enough time, right? So because you know you're going to have to take that test, you need to spend time trying to figure out how to position your mind to read problems, understand them really quickly, and figure out how to solve this, how to solve that, figure out what equation you need to use, right? And how to operate the calculator pretty fast. Like, I can tell you this. I got to a point where I can operate a calculator without looking at the calculator keyboard. And I got to a point where I was doing integrals in my head. That's calculus, by the way, for those who are not familiar, right? Integrals that will take a long time on a whiteboard to solve, no? Because I don't have much time on a test, I can do all that stuff in my head. I got to a point where like I spent a lot of time trying to like train myself that I got to a point where I was doing a simple calculation, like 3 to the 24th. I think it's in the billions. The number is in the billions. I was doing that in my head, right? That's an intimate process that got me there. Integrals that would take like, let's just say you have like, maybe 20 foot whiteboard, right? And you fill it up with calculations, right? Three times. You wipe it. You do it three times. That level of calculation, I was able to do it in my head at that time. Spent a lot of time training myself and trying to like get speed, you know? And then you have other people, other engineers who are sort of, we have these conversations after our tests, like, hey, how did you do? How did the test go? And then we tell each other our test scores. And it was like a competition. Right. So that's the environment the university creates.
Right.
Right. And that pushed me to that point where I realized, holy shit, you know, I'm good. Mm. And my colleagues were also at the point where they can actually quickly, you know, tabulate numbers really fast on the calculator and be able to write, you know, the solution on the paper really quick and move on to the next problem. Right. It forced us to that point. Right. So you do need that environment to actually create this kind of like conditioning, create this kind of skill set, right? You know, if I was to do that outside of, people would think like a magician. You ask me this and I'm able to just think about it and just give you a solution right away.
Yeah.
But that was just a whole like environment that created that. But if you can create that in yourself at home, then you don't need the university. If you're self-motivated, right? And you're self-challenged, right? And say you are going to spend your time going to conferences and whatnot. So you get to build connections and whatnot, because universities give you connections, right? By default. Then I think you can get to a point where you can say, yeah, I can skip college. I can skip university and focus on actually solving a problem, or focus on actually like, you know, learning. I'll tell you this. I actually never majored in software engineering or computer science. I majored in mechanical. Did that for 4 years, did two internships in mechanical, and then I switched to mathematics, and then I started a company, and that's what moved me out of university arena, and I had to learn software on my own. I learned everything on my own. Mathematics forced me to take two courses in computer science. That was just basic courses. At that time, I thought it was a waste of my time because I was madly in love with mathematics, right? So and one thing I want to say too is mathematics forced me to challenge myself constantly, constantly, because by design, it's like, you solve this problem. How do we make this problem more complex? So you solve it. Oh, quick. What if we change the scenarios? What does it imply? And then it just gets more and more complex, right? It's like, it doesn't stop.
So it helps with your problem solving skills.
It helps with the problem solving skills, right? And so when I ventured into software engineering, everything was so easy.
Yeah.
It was just like baby stuff for me.
That's problem solving.
Yes, because like mathematics is at that point where it's like intense solving problems all the time. And then computer science and engineering was like, there is a limit on how complex it gets, right? Whereas in math, there was like no limit on how complex it can get. You're just getting more and more complex and complex and complex. Whereas in computer science, it felt like there was some sort of a cap to it, right? How hard could it be, right? And so that gives you confidence to approach problems. And if you build that kind of confidence, right? This is a confidence I built in college, right? But if you can build that confidence at home, right? That's gonna engage you in solving very, very hard and technical problems. And by so doing, you're going to learn the skills necessary to solve that problem. Now, let me bring it down to earth. Let's just say you want to be a software engineer, right? Some people have taken the direction of boot camps and what have you, right? Go to a place, they teach you HTML, CSS, JavaScript,
Python,
and what have you. Yeah. And you come out of that and you think you're a software engineer or you're not. If I give you a problem, you can't solve it, right? Unless that boot camp was solely focused on problem solving, right? They give you a project. So I would advise anyone who wants to venture into tech to pick a problem, right? And examine themselves that, hey, am I willing to be committed to making sure that this problem is solved? If you answer yes to that, then you're committed to doing whatever it takes to solve that problem, because it is damn hard to learn computer science and software development, because look, everything is going to fail. You're going to have a lot of things not working the way it should in the process. If you are dedicated to solving that problem, once you solve that problem, you learn all the skills that you need to learn to become an engineer. So that implies that if you have to learn algorithms to solve a certain problems, right? This is stuff that you take in college. You take an algorithms course in college, right? If you were to solve a problem that requires you to have algorithms knowledge, what would you do? You go and fetch the source of information for that, and then you learn it so you can come back and continue solving your problem.
Yep.
So by then, you've taken the course by design.
Okay.
Just because you're trying to solve a problem, you'll be taking multiple courses just because you're solving that problem. And you're not taking like an official course. You're learning to the extent that you absorb enough information as if you were taking a course in college.
And that also means that you may not even have to take any course. It may all be available on the internet for you.
It will be all available for you on the internet.
Searching right resources.
And I'll encourage people to start using like, Gemini and ChatGPT and what have you that are out there. Query it, ask how would you approach this? How would you solve this problem? What are the things I need to learn in order to be able to solve this problem? Yes, it might not give you answers because it's not capable of giving you answers to solve a certain unique problem, right? But it's important to know that you need to seek out the information that's going to enable you, that's going to empower you. And you need to align yourself to learning. Align yourself to being passionate about learning and absorbing as much information as you possibly can so you can become that person that solves that problem.
I met a few guys from a renowned, tech school.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were at level, I think it's 300, whatever they call it here. And I asked them, what have you guys done?
Mm-hmm.
And they could improve it. And these were students supposedly in their third year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, look, just show me what you've done. In the end, it took them about 2 weeks to produce something. And look, this is something that I could have done when I was 17 years. Terrible. So I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
You know, even if you don't go through the school system and you decide to adopt the mindset of problem solving, you can become a tech genius in your own way.
And I'm going to inspire your audience a little bit. I actually don't have a bachelor's.
Whoa.
Yes, I don't. But I was a principal engineer manager at Microsoft. I was managing engineers that had master's degrees. I was managing engineers that had everything, principal engineers and what have you. Why? What made it possible?
Problem solving.
Exactly. I focused on solving problems, and there was evidence of me solving problems, right? And when I worked at US Bank, I solved problems, very high visibility, important problems that I could talk about in interviews, right? So you can never underestimate solving problems. The degree didn't matter. I remember back in the day, man, Microsoft was this organization that all they cared about was credentials. And they grew out of that, realizing that, wow, there are people who didn't actually like, you know, go through the university system and learn and get, you know, these masters and PhDs and whatnot. And they are highly performant individuals. They get a lot of stuff done. One thing I focused on is getting stuff done.
Mm.
Like, I do everything possible to actually make sure that this particular thing I'm doing, it gets to the point where it's done. You know, and I'll spend hours, you know. I have like times when I've done like 3 days with no sleep or 4 days with no sleep because I was so motivated in making sure that I solved this problem one way or the other, right? And when you solve problems at quality, not just solving the problems, at quality, make sure they are high quality solutions. People are going to see that. And when you're talking to someone, look, I tell people this too. There are people who have these degrees and PhD. When they put me side to side to them and we're talking about something, they'll tell them to, you know, because they see a clear difference. I'm sure like when I've done interviews, they've had someone else who did the interview for the same role, but they were more impressed with me because like what they're hearing and what I'm talking about shows a whole lot more expertise than that person who's walking out with so much credentials, right? That problem-solving piece does all the magic.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Kevin, I had a guest here.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, I'm not advocating for doing 4 days of no sleep and 3 days of no sleep, by the way. Don't do that. I would never do that again.
Whatever works with individual people.
No, don't do it.
No.
Be healthy and efficient.
That's right. I've had a guest here. Uh-huh. An awesome lady. Gloria,
mm-hmm.
who's a multi-millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wait for people to hear her interview.
Mm-hmm.
She came all the way from the US as well.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a question for my next guest.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened to be you.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know it was going to be you. And then the question is, if you were to rewind 20 years, what will you do differently?
Man, honestly, that time, I wasn't so confident about my capabilities, right? My confidence came at age 20. At age 20, 19, thereabouts, I spent a lot of time asking myself, what's the best way to live, right? I spent a lot of time reading everything. You know, I read like philosophy papers. I read the Bible cover to cover. I read, you know, like the Quran and other things. And
religious books.
Yeah, religious books. Because I really wanted to answer that question in a very concrete and convincing way. You know, and I wanted to be analytical. I really believe that we're giving brains to think. I really believe that we're not giving brains to just simply not use it. I think we should use our brains. And so one thing that I came to conclusion was we are here to help people, right? Once I realized that, I started aligning myself. I asked myself, how can I help people? I need to have skills. And I need to be bold. I need to be very, very convicted, and I need to be honest, right? If I had the opportunity to, you know, go back in time, I would have done that work at 20 you know, now I'm revealing my age at 14 instead. That would have made a huge difference in my trajectory. That would have meant I would have wasted less time, you know, trying this, trying that, you know, and just saying, this is what I need to solve. And I would have started solving the problems that I'm solving today much earlier. I'd have gained an extra, 6 years of expertise. And that confidence that I'm talking about, also around 20, remember I talked about how we pushed ourselves to the limit and everything. 19, 20, we were doing that. I would have loved to have done that at 14, right? I think around that time, I didn't know, I just thought these people were just designated as good. And yeah, this is what they do. But around 20, you know, I learned that, what all those people are doing, I can do that too. I mean, if I choose to do it, I can do it. So if I had the opportunity, challenge myself and then learn about the best way to live earlier and would have, you know, aligned myself much earlier and built skills much earlier.
Fantastic. That's good. That's really nice to hear. So it leads on to our two questions. Mm-hmm. Very brief. Motivation or discipline?
Discipline.
Okay.
Discipline, look, anything you want to accomplish in life, you're going to need consistency. You know, when motivation is not high, discipline is what's going to take over.
Mm. I like that. Kevin, what's the best advice you ever received from anyone?
I'll tell you two things that motivated me back in the day. One, when I was really young, my grandfather said, when I was really young, right, my sister, who was younger than me, was better at reading than I was. So it was used against me, and I felt like bad and all of that, right? I was young. But my grandfather at the time was telling people to leave me alone. When he grows, he will get better. And then fast forward, you know, before middle school, I was in Ghana around for class six, class four. I think around class four is when I was literally the best mathematician in my class. You know, I was the math guy. All of a sudden, this guy who was not really, you know, at the top, all of a sudden he's at the top for math, right? I look back at that, and it's encouraging that to say that you might not be good today, but you're going to be better tomorrow.
Mm.
Coupled with this, I think this one is 14 when I came across Kofi Annan. I don't know him personally, but I saw his quote. He said, "I'm misquoting this, but knowledge is power. Education is the premises of progress in every society and every something like that." So I was focused on knowledge, trying to have as much knowledge as possible. Gosh, I spent lots and lots and lots of times on Wikipedia just reading stuff randomly, reading papers. I just wanted to know. And education is the premises of progress. Education, you need to educate yourself. You know, if you don't educate yourself, you're not progressing. And so I saw him as my idol, even though I was not going to go the political route.
Yep.
And so that those words, I held on to it. Knowledge is power. Just kept holding on to it. Every time I just tell myself, even though I was 14, I was not very advanced. But I just know that I just need to focus on knowledge. I just need to focus on my studies. And so in high school, I was trying to perform the best that I can. You know, I treated my teachers with utmost respect. They were like gods to me. I was just listening. I was sitting in front of the class, you know,
A good student.
A good student. I wanted to learn everything. I wanted to know everything because I knew education was important. So I think those things, you'll be better, right? And then education and knowledge is power.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, this leads us on to the question for our next guest.
Oh, well, I think in the current times we are in, I think it's appropriate to ask our next guest, how can AI and machine learning solve your current problems? And how can it solve problems for your community, your country, and Africa at large?
Thank you so much. Look, if you haven't subscribed, please do share this content so that we can grow. We can't wait to get to 10,000 subscribers on our YouTube platform. And when we do get there, we want to do something great for all our listeners and our viewers. We want to support some businesses in Ghana locally with some cash. So let's get there as fast as we can. Thank you so much and stay connected.